Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members and those individuals who are joining us today, please mute your mics. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at House Television webcast, and also you can see it online. With that, I call the Committee Legislative Assistance to take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor, present. Vice Chair Zhejiang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhejiang, present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton, present. Baker. Baker. Dabney. Frankie?
Present.
Frankie, present. Greenwin?
Present.
Greenwin, present. Haley?
Present.
Haley, present. Jurgens?
Present.
Jurgens, present. Cagle?
Present.
Cagle, present. Katisa Watun?
Present.
Katisa Watun, present. Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Toujong?
Present.
Toujong, present. Representative Baker? Representative Baker? Representative Dabney? Representative Dabney? Chair Noor, we have quorum.
Thank you so much, members. We have a quorum present. I'll now entertain a motion to approve the minutes for February 8th.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson moves the approval for the minutes for February 8th. Any discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes for February 12th are now approved. February 8th are now approved. Members, we do have a few bills in front of the committee today, and I see Representative Dabney joining us. Welcome to the committee. So we do have our first bill for Representative Sandin, and I just wanted to make sure that we understand the process. We have many options, and I think one of the options is to lay it over, and we will go with that at this point to make sure that we do have a streamlined process. This is a capital investment bill. Representative Sandin, welcome to the committee. And please explain your bill. I move House File 22 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Representative Sandin, you are muted.
I'll get good at this in a couple of years. Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for having this hearing today. House File 22 is a request from the Cloquet Area Fire District to participate with DEED on a cost-sharing project to acquire a site, design, and build a fire station to serve the residents within the Cloquet Area Fire District, Ambulance and Fire District. Most importantly, this site would house and train both full-time and paid on-call firefighters in the district. Currently, the district fire chief and his leadership team have been having conversations on the best use of these funds to meet their needs. As this bill moves forward through the process, we may have the need to amend a few details with the input from the district. With me today to testify and discuss the project is Matt Ashmore, chief of the Cloquet Area Fire District.
Thank you, Chair Sandin. Please welcome your first testifier and introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Matt Ashmore. I'm the fire chief here at the Cloquet Area Fire District, and I appreciate the time that you're taking to hear our bill out. This bill is a little over 5 years in the making and hundreds of thousands of dollars spent out of the district to come up with the plans that we've had to have a new constructed building that will house our main, combine two stations into one for our district. There are other opportunities that we're looking at doing with some of this money that includes a station two, potentially, that's on our Fond du Lac reservation, so we can start to service that part of the district better. So throughout this process, part of the deal was for us to have a better service given to our citizens in our area, in our district. So by having these stations, it'll allow us to have the actual room and the capacity to cut down on having multiple stations and having more of a consistent response out of where we need to go. Along with that, it'll allow us to have a better training grounds to be more of a hub within the area for other departments that can come and help train with us, help operate with us, so we can work as a cohesive group in our entire area, not just the district. Our current location, I believe, started out as a YMCA, so it never was intended to be a fire department. It was a police station, then it was a joint police and fire station, and now it's a fire station. So for many years, it's always been repurposed, and it really has outlived its life. So we're hoping that we'll be able to work with the legislation going forward on a bill like this that can really make a dramatic impact to the district and to the citizens that we have in our area. And I can answer any questions if anybody has any questions they'd like answered.
Thank you, Mr. Ashmore. Members, any discussions? Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What type of bonds are these? Are these general obligation bonds or appropriation bonds or something different?
Representative Sandin.
I believe the general obligation bonds.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jennings.
Has this bill already been heard in capital investment? And my understanding from the chat questions is it's not moving into capital investment from this committee. Has it already been heard in capital investment?
Representative Jennings, no. I think there's a process that we have always used, and I think I spoke with Lead Hamilton on this process, because for capital investment that are sent to the committee, we can lay it over and another bill can be introduced, or otherwise there are other procedures that we will have to go through. Lead Hamilton, if you wanted to weigh in into that conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The chairman and I did talk, Representative Juergens, about instead of voting on this bill and moving it out one way or the other, historically what we've done is after hearing these bills, we've wrote letters and sent that on to capital investment. So the chair and I discussed that, what has taken place historically. And at this time, I believe the chair's decision was to lay this over. So the chair and I will be having further discussions as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Lead Hamilton. Representative Jones.
Thank you for the clarification. No further questions.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I believe my question might be more for Mr. Ashmore. I'm wondering, how large is the coverage area of the Cloquet Fire District? Most fire districts don't just serve one community, so is there multiple communities within this fire district? What is your coverage area? That's my question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Ms. Ashmore.
Mr. Chair, committee members, yes, and I just started this job here on November 30th, so I'm learning all the ins and outs, what communities we actually serve. But we serve quite a large area. It's over 200 square miles, seven different communities, including the Fond du Lac tribe. And so we have over 22,000 residents that we service. And that's just in our general area. Our ambulance reach for our paramedic services reach beyond that, going as far as farther south when people need us to be called. So it's quite a large area that we do have.
Representative Frankie.
No more further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Ashmore.
Thank you so much, and congratulations on your new task. And Representative Sandin, did you want to have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just remind the committee here that we have to keep our public servants safe and comfortable while they're waiting to respond to emergencies in our communities. This current facility that's in use, I actually worked on it close to 40 years ago during one of the remodeling processes, and it is sorrowfully outdated. So I appreciate your attention today and looking forward to moving on to the Capital Investment Committee at the appropriate time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Representative Dean. House File 22 will be laid over. Having said that, I also wanted to thank Mr. Ashmore for his testimony. The next bill we have, members, is House File 426, which is Representative Wogerman's bill. So Representative Greenman moves House File 426 to be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. Representative Wogerman, welcome to the committee, and if you can give us a brief description of your bill, and I understand you do have an author's amendment.
Mr. Chair, I think he checked in but said that he would be back. So if we want to move on to one of the other bills on the agenda, we can come back. He had another obligation at another committee that he was hoping would be wrapped up, but apparently is not quite yet.
Thank you so much. And I think with the rest, the two bills that are in front of us, they I'm the one who's carrying, so I'm going to be transferring virtually the gavel to Chair Zhong. Please proceed there with the leadership of the committee.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I believe you have House File 610. And did you want to make your motion on the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House File 610 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
To your bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to review. I believe this is the Father's Project Bill, Travis. So the 610 is in regards to this bill. I wanted to make some clarity for the committee. We are talking about resources allocation based on the Workforce Development Fund. As we are aware of, the administration and the deed are proposing changes to this process. And I wanted to be more clear. We don't want a process where we're merely moving the chairs around and not figuring out what we're going to be doing the right way. So we're having these hearings to make sure we understand the work that many of the organizations are doing on the ground to make sure we understand and value the work that they do. So to my bill, Mr. Chair, the Father's Project, which is fostering actions to help earnings and responsibility. This program is under Goodwill Easter Sales. It serves thousands of fathers through an extensive network of community partners. They provide case management, parenting support, child services, father and family activities, employment services, and including GED program. Members, as you recall, during the civil unrest, one of these programs that exists in Representative Devaney's district was significantly damaged. And we know the need that exists in supporting the fathers to be able to become sustainable, to be able to find jobs that they can provide support to their families and connect with their children is key. And making sure that we continue to support entities that have done a good job in ensuring that there's a return for our intentions, because sometimes people tend to forget there's nothing called return for investment when you're helping individuals succeed. It's more based on what is our intention to support this kind of programs. And with that, I just wanted to welcome my testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Your testifier, Mr. Chair, if you could state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if Guy Ballings, Mr. Ballings, if you wanted to start the testimony or you wanted to give it to somebody else to open.
Mr. Bowen?
I can begin. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Representative Noor. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Guy Bowling. I'm the program manager of the Father Project, as Representative Noor said, a program of Goodwill Easter Seals, Minnesota. Thank you again, Representative Noor, and the members of this committee for the opportunity to speak about this unique, impactful program that equips fathers with the skills needed to help their children, their families, and our communities thrive. As a leader in employment service for 100 years, Goodreach Sales Minnesota provides customized programs to eliminate barriers to work and independence. Our Father Project has served dads through a powerful combination of economic stability and work supports, parenting support, and legal justice support for the past 20 years. 9 years ago, we received a highly competitive federal responsible fatherhood grant, which allowed us to expand the program across the state, all the way starting into the Twin Cities into Park Rapids, St. Cloud, and Rochester, with our key partners, Family Service Rochester, St. Joseph's Health in Park Rapids. We nearly served about 2,000 men across all those locations during that five-year grant. We support, motivate, and encourage men in the ways that are essential for them to become better dads. We integrate job coaching, placement, parenting classes, child support, GED education, as Representative Norb mentioned. In each community, we have four strong partnerships with local employers, as well as child support, legal, and other service agencies to create solutions in helping low-income fathers support their children, both financially and emotionally. These connections are critically important as we assist dads in engaging in the workforce and stabilizing their finances so they can re-engage in the lives of their children. Our experience is that many non-custodials, they definitely want to be involved in the lives of their kids, but they need to develop the tools and connect with the support system to be successful in doing so. Our goal is to help dads get jobs, train for better jobs, and move into careers as they become positive, productive workers and parents. The past year has been challenging. In addition to the effects of COVID-19 pandemic, we were also greatly impacted by the unrest of last summer. We've operated on Lake Street in South Minneapolis, just across the street from the 3rd Precinct for 10 years. We serve primarily men of color that are low-income, non-custodial. Majority of them are either unemployed or underemployed. Unfortunately, our program space at the Coliseum building was destroyed during the unrest in South Minneapolis last summer, leaving our space uninhabitable. However, the men in our community, they still need services now, and they will need us in the years to come. We have testified before you in recent years, and from that testimony, you know that men we serve are not supported through other government funding streams. The critical financial resources we are requesting from the state will allow us to continue to have and be an embedded presence on Lake Street while expanding to East St. Paul, where the community continues to request our services. Over the past 18 months, we've enrolled over 200 dads in the program across all of our locations. Of these, the majority of them have a criminal record. And as you can see in the program overview I described earlier, we serve a diverse mix of individuals across our state, and our outcomes are strong. Despite the many challenges in 2020, 76 dads were placed in employment. 78 dads completed the 12-week intensive parenting group, with many more still in progress. And many of these fathers have increased their contact with their children. So without a state appropriation in the last biennium and without any federal funding, we have limped along with the skeleton staff to continue to serve dads as best we can. Clearly, the needs of our community remain great. That's why we are grateful to Representative Knorr for requesting his funding, as well as current co-sponsors, Representative Zong and Representative Dapp. This state investment would allow us to significantly strengthen our efforts and expand the number of families we serve in Minnesota. With state funding support, we can serve hundreds more fathers and help them stabilize employment. Thank you for this opportunity to highlight the importance of supporting fathers across Minnesota. We hope you will strongly advocate for the inclusion of funding for fatherhood program in the Workforce Committee budget. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, but first, please let me introduce one of our community partners in this very important work, Mr. Sidney Fry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowling. Mr. Fry, if you could state your name for the record and begin.
Good afternoon. Yes, my name is Sidney Fry. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be with you all on today. I have the privilege of serving as the program manager for Father Project in Rochester. Though my full-time job is really being a father of five myself, and at this point, also a part-time school teacher to boot. Our Rochester site is a collaborative initiative offered through Family Service Rochester, a longstanding community-based agency in partnership with Olmsted County Health, Housing, and Human Services. As an outstate outpost, in Rochester, we can certainly attest to many of the things that Guy was referencing as it relates to supporting fathers. And we've recognized that fundamentally, the needs of fathers remain unchanged regardless of locality. And so they're very much consistent with the needs of our brethren here in the Metro. However, the strategies, I guess you could say, we've utilized to serve fathers within Rochester and Olmsted County do account for unique and individualized needs that are germane to our community. As the third largest city in the state and home of the state's largest employer, we're uniquely positioned to meet the needs of dads who, for example, may have barriers to entering into the healthcare field, which dominates our local economy. So toward that end, we've utilized what could be referred to as a cross-sector integrated services approach to overcoming barriers to both employment and economic stability for low-income fathers. Ultimately, what we're doing is helping dads that are invested in investing in the lives of their kids do just that. So in addition to job readiness and career development work, we've also included wraparound services related to housing through a unique master leasing initiative with our local housing redevelopment authority. We've also increased our partnership with child support, resulting in contempt alternatives that actually do not create additional barriers for dads getting to work. We partnered with Olmsted County's Pathways to Prosperity and Wellbeing National Pilot Project, which is really aimed at creating pathways off of public assistance and untoward economic mobility for families that have been kind of stuck in the throes of generational poverty. So as a result of these continuing efforts and critical work, we've seen results. We've seen results as it relates to the issue of equity. The work that we're doing is helping to address equity as it relates to family reunification and out-of-home placement for children of color within our child welfare system. We've seen results as it relates to economic stability, job placements, increases in wage advancements, advancements in careers, pursuing post-secondary education and technical training for fathers. So as significant as all of these economic benefits are for the dads that we do serve, I believe as a two-generation whole families approach, we recognize that what we're really doing is playing the long game. And I, for one, can anticipate that the long-term implications of dads being involved in their kids' life will really have a lasting implication on intergenerational poverty and the children that are being served as a result of this program. So I would just like to, again, thank you for the opportunity to share about our program to the co-authors and all members of the committee. It's now my privilege to introduce to you a member of the Father Project Citizen Father Fraternity, a good brother, Mr. Michael Russell.
Mr. Russell, if you could state your name for a record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Michael Russell. Thank you all for having me. I came to the Father Project about February of 2009 as a participant seeking services, primarily genetic testing for my youngest child and where to go from there as far as my rights and responsibilities in regards to custody, parenting time, child support. I was also having challenges with employment at the time. It was kind of during that recession piece, with despite my background being kind of clear and me having post-secondary education, I still couldn't find employment, housing and transportation challenges. Going through the Father Project, I was able to get genetic testing squared away, get my child support, custody, parenting time, co-parenting skills and whatnot via the parenting support groups that I was able to attend. Since then, I've always been able to maintain at least one full-time job and a part-time job through the support from Father Project's employment piece. Children have been great since then. They've been involved with the program. For a number of years, they were on the literature. They were happy to kind of see their faces on bus stops and as Father Project was advertising other services. And so they still enjoyed it and still enjoyed being engaged to this day. I started volunteering with Father Project in 2010 after I completed my benchmarks, and in 2013 I was able to be hired on full time through an initiative grant that we were working with, and I've been connected ever since in various roles with both Father Project and Goodwill Easter Seals, Minnesota. And Currently, I'm doing a case management for the Hennepin County MFIB with Father Project, new pilot partnership, and I'm doing reentry counselor as well for Goodwill Easter Seals, Minnesota. And I have a part-time job within the aviation industry as well. I'm also a parent group facilitator, and so I facilitate groups once or twice a week. I also do the tech hosting for all the groups and all of our logistics for Father Project, services and programming for all our groups, all our meetings and whatnot as well. My main role, if I were to say, would be working with other fathers and helping them along their way find stability in their lives for themselves and their children as well. A work I enjoy. I would not have been able to become stable without the support of the Father Project. Again, just thank you all for having us and considering us for future funding.
Thank you, Mr. Russell, for your testimony. I see that Representative Haley has a question. Representative Haley.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions, maybe for the first testifier. Thank you, Representative Zhang, for bringing this bill forward. I certainly support the intent of the program and agree with the importance of parents and fathers and children having that connection and that safe place and that nurturing. I was wondering if you can tell us, if I remember this project and the testimony from last session, if you can tell us if we funded this and to what extent did we fund it in the past?
Oh, I'm
sorry. Would you ask Mr. Bowman?
You know, we received funding. We haven't received funding in quite some time. The last funding we received was a couple of years ago with a direct appropriation, and then we didn't receive it within the last couple of years. But we did receive a small grant from DEED more recently. But again, as I was saying before, we've been limping along, you know, primarily being covered by our organization. And again, we're down to a staff person in our Twin Cities metro area. But that's why we're coming to you now for this direct appropriation for a year, if not longer. But we haven't received funding in a couple of years now through government funding.
Representative
Haley. Thank you. And I should clarify, thank you, Representative Knorr, for bringing the bill forward. A question also then for Chair Knorr, if I can. It looks like we'll be hearing another bill this afternoon on another project. And I'm wondering if it would be helpful for committee members to receive the deed. I think they call it the dashboard report, but I could be wrong on that. So we could have some understanding of how these programs that have been previously funded or considered, what their results look like and what the criteria deed uses on an accountability measurements so that we know the outcomes of the money and the programs that we're funding. Can you address that, Chair Knorr?
Chair Knorr?
Chair Zhang, that's a good question because we will have a hearing on the recommendation from DEED in the coming days, which we anticipate that we'll get a clear picture on the previous projects and the funding, the direct appropriation funding that we usually do that goes directly to the organizations. But we can get a deep dive into the metrics of the programs that are being run through DEED in the coming days to understand the budget request that is going to be put forward. So I look forward to having a robust conversation on what the needs are today because of the fallout of the economy and many workers who have been laid off. So we will have a robust conversation. I promise to do that.
Representative Aaron.
Thank you, Chair Knorr. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Haley.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first I want to thank Mr. Russell for your testimony. Greatly appreciate it. And Mr. Bowling, I understand the importance of a father being involved in the lives of their children. You know, my mom and dad were divorced when I was 2 or 3 years old, you know, and raised by a single mother. You understand that importance. And Chair Knorr reached out to me asking if I'd be willing to sign on to this bill. So I did some additional research, talked to some individuals, and and read up on the program as well. And so after I've done that, I did sign on. I added my support, my name to the bill. So one of the questions I do have is how do you get the word out? How do you connect with the individuals that can benefit from your services?
Mr. Bowling?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge your support in co-authoring our bill, and I just want to make sure that you you know how much we appreciate that, and thank you again. But to answer your question, Representative Hamilton, we do it in a variety of different ways, and I have to say we have tried everything under the sun in terms of our targeted recruitment. So we do everything from our collaborative partnership, and I'm pretty sure Sydney can speak to this as well, our collaborative partnership with Child Support, our collaborative partnership within different nonprofit organizations, our partnership with ECFE, our partnership with folks like Way to Grow, the court system, word of mouth, the dads themselves. We talk to mothers. We talk to grandmothers. We talk to ex-romantic partners. And so we do flyers, we've done commercials, we've done radio, we've done outreach on street corners. I mean, you name it, we've done it. And I have to say, it's no foolproof method in terms of recruiting guys, but meeting them where they are is the most important part of what it is that we do. And so if we end up having to talk to a guy on the street corner or on the bus or on a bus stop or in the community or at community events, we've done it. And but I would have to say the best advertisement for guys coming to our program is word of mouth from the other guys who have been through it, to really take them under their wing and take them under you know, their arm to say, hey, you know what, I've been there, I've accomplished these things, and you can as well, because you got a good strong cast of supporters that's there to help you. And even though we have a smaller team right now, the more we can increase our passage to work, the more people we can serve. So it's been a whole combination of efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, thank you to all the testifiers, and thank you for all that you do. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Hampton.
Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank you, Mr. Bowling, Mr. Russell, and Mr. Fry for being here today to testify on this bill. But more importantly, thank you for the work that you're doing in your communities and helping to strengthen the role of the father and how that impacts them as individuals, but more importantly, how it impacts their kids, their families.
Sure.
Could you talk a little bit about what this appropriation would mean? It sounds like for the last couple of years, there has not been a direct appropriation. So, you know, tell me what kind of an impact this would have on the kids involved, on the children of the fathers that you work with. Could you please?
Mr. Foley.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, improving outcome for kids, there's so many different strategies and approaches to be able to see that benefit to those children. So by having these guys be in a position of economic stability and getting jobs, livable wage jobs, they can put themselves in a position to take care of their children financially by being able to have a huge presence in their life, really feeling good about themselves, but ultimately paying their child support. These guys don't have a problem paying child support if it's reasonable, if they have the dollars to be able to do it, and if they're in a position to be able to have a job that could lead to a career that ultimately could support their family. That helps the kid. Having skills and knowledge about what it means to be responsible as a parent, that helps the child's self-esteem. Being able to have an understanding about communication and being able to get along and have a relationship with their romantic partner, be it they're romantically involved now or they were before, but being able to co-parent together, that benefits kids. Having an understanding about the early childhood development education piece in terms of how they're growing and developing and understanding and how the biggest time in their life that their brain is growing the most within those first 3 years, that helps that child's self-esteem. But more importantly, I think understanding that they're not alone and they don't have to do this alone. And they got other folks that can support them within their own systems. As all of us need systems to support our efforts for us pursuing, you know, our goal of trying to be the best parent we can be, the best individual we can be, but having those resources around them to support them in that network. I think the long-term effects impacts children and how they do in school, how they feel about themselves, but more importantly, the relationship they have with their parent or both parents if they're co-parenting together.
Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and very well stated, Mr. Bowling. Thank you very much. And I intend to also sign on to this bill. I think it's important. I appreciate learning more about it today. And on the same topic of fathers and their involvement in their kids' lives, there's other bills throughout, you know, that are being introduced having to do with getting more fathers involved in their child's life, whether it's shared parenting through and having equal custody when that works out. And you know what, maybe by participating in your program, some of these fathers that don't have a big role in their child's life, that'll change. And they will be there to be the role model for those kids. Because I think we can all agree when both parents are fit, loving parents, that's the best thing for the child. So thank you again for bringing this forward. And I will be adding my name as a co-author. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Juergens. Thank you, sir.
Representative Abbey.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. And just a brief comment. When Mr. Bowling was first presenting, what occurred to me, and he's picked up I discern a theme that the work of the Father Project is about building more resilient men. More resilient because they've increased their education. Maybe they've gotten that GED because they're reconnected with their children and have a emotionally satisfying and productive dimension in that area. Maybe they've reconnected with a romantic partner. He's talked about that. They've gotten job skills and they're more economically resilient. And there's just a theme there about building resilience amongst these men and their families. But I want to ask the committee to reflect briefly on the resilience that the Father Project has demonstrated since early June of last year, when the Coliseum building was destroyed during the uprising. That was a real loss to my community, to our community, Mr. Bowling. The work of the Father Project helped build the resilience of South Minneapolis because it worked with the men there and strengthened our whole community. But it also has demonstrated resilience by carrying on and continuing to deliver services through a very difficult and trying time. And I think there's a value in there's a value in demonstrating the values you teach. And I just wanted to credit Mr. Bowling, the other men involved, and the Father Project for their resilience and their commitment and contributions to my community. We'll be rebuilding. And just as the Father Project provides support and systems to help men rebuild, we're looking to the state to provide assistance and support and systems for South Minneapolis to rebuild. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Davini. Chair Noor, would you like to conclude?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the conversation in regards to the Father's Project. I know on the day that the civil unrest, when the office was burnt down, I was there with Mr. Bowling to see how we can help them. And I think we will continue to look for avenues to support, because I visited most of the programs with Chair Davini up to the Workforce Center, which was also damaged, and also Migizi, and so many other good programs that are being done by the community for the community. And I appreciate the work the Father's Project is doing. And I look forward to providing more support for this kind of programs that yield result for our community. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Noor, would you like to renew your motion?
I renew my motion. House File 610 be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And next on the agenda is House File 612. Your bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. This is the Ujamaa place. And as you have heard from Chair Davini, he talked about resilience. And quite frankly, Ujamaa Place, we present that resilience. This program primarily serves African-American men with multiple barriers to become more stable, productive members of the society. They always use a theory of transformation and evaluation framework to help those who are in need. Mr. Chair and members, if you listened to the commissioner recently when he was talking about the impact of COVID-19, which disproportionately impacted BIPOC community. He stated that 67% of African-American or Black workers experienced unemployment, and at least they collected 1 week of unemployment benefit. Quite frankly, with those challenges, can you imagine having some significant barriers for you to tap into an opportunity. Ujamaa Place has existed to provide that kind of support to individuals with multiple barriers who are hard to employ, who are seeking an opportunity and possibility for their lives. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to welcome my testifiers on this bill. The first one will be the director for Ujamaa Place. Mr. Chair, I'd like to proceed with the testifiers.
Mr. Vanners, if you would state your name for a record and proceed.
It is Otis, O-T-I-S, Zanders, Z-A-N-D-E-R-S, Otis Zanders. Chairman Noor and members of the committee, again, my name is Otis Zanders. I want to thank you for this opportunity to present to many and introduce to others Ujamaa Place. As Chairman Noor has mentioned, we provide programs for a holistic program for young men that's navigating life, that's trying to overcome barriers to put them on a pathway to prosperity here. So we're anxious to introduce ourselves to you. I will be joined in succession by Monique Linder, who's our data analyst. And after her would be one of our current Ujamaa men, Mr. Bowell. And we will close up our testimonies today with Ramon Johnson, who is a successful alumni. But briefly, getting back to today's mission, it's an honor to be here to talk about how we have in the past have leveraged our strength to improve the lives of people that have contact with our program. Young men that come to us with deficits. Young men that have come, most of them have had barriers that interrupt the flow of prosperity. Come to us with a deficit, if I may, whether it's unpaid fines, unlawful detainers, have had contact with the penal justice system, or just trying to navigate poverty. So in our program, we are referred to as the theory of transformation. Our lodging model provides wraparound services. Wraparound services that include actually 37 services that falls upon the pillars of wellness, education, housing, as well as trying to eliminate contact with the penal system and employment. We'll be presenting you data to show that with your investment, how we continue to grow in each of our areas. We show that our performance in the area, that we've been great stewards of your resources as we go forward. We're here to talk about this request for another biennium. Previous biennium, we're coming for you, have enjoyed bipartisan support for this innovative program to help the lives in a culturally enriched environment. So it's with great honor and pleasure to present to you today that your investment has been leveraged to get additional support. And we come to you in 2021 asking for additional resources so we can improve the lives of more men, that we can extend our reach out of Ramsey County, maybe Hennepin County. And we know that this effective model can be used to add a lot of value and provide more employment opportunities for historically marginalized young Black men. We are confident that we are on the right track to provide an emerging workforce. With that, I'd like to bring to the forefront Monique Linder to talk about a deep dive or a short dive into our data collection that we have for you.
Thank you, Mr. Vanners. Ms. Linder, please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Monique Linder, and I serve as the data and media consultant for Ujamaa Place. Thank you, Chairman Noor and members of the committee. In 2016, is it okay to proceed? I'm sorry.
Yes, proceed, please.
In 2016, I came to know Ujamaa Place during my graduate studies at the University of Minnesota's Carson School of Management and as a CURA researcher. Ujamaa Place was one of the organizations that I interviewed when I published a poverty study. My research set out to prove that organizations with strong leadership, data infrastructure, and efficient operations were most effective at reducing poverty. Shortly after publishing Disrupting Poverty, Ujamaa contracted me to analyze their data and to create a data-centric culture within the organization under its theory of transformation research-supported logic model, which was developed in partnership with Wilder Research with five ultimate outcomes. Those outcomes are stable housing situation, increased educational attainment, securing and retaining employment, connection with family and children, and eliminating contact with the criminal justice system. In 4 years of intense attention to data practices and culture, Ujamaa Place has high context coaches that use the data under its core pillars that Mr. Zanders described, in addition to embedding cultural programming to support those 37 transformation services that the men receive through their transformation journey. Ujamaa coaches track all activities, tasks, milestones, and services used in ClientTrack, which is the data system that is customized to track their performance measurement based on completing program requirements under each individual transformation plan that the men receive. Based on data, we know that 50% of our men are employed and homeless. There is a direct correlation between level of education attained and homelessness. Ujamaa men test at a 4th through 8th grade reading, writing, and math academic level at the time of enrollment. 50% of Ujamaa men have a criminal record. We're able to draw poverty maps using zip codes that match extreme poverty concentrated areas in communities of colors, in communities of color in the Twin Cities. We use qualitative data in the form of informant interviews with the men to understand the full picture that shows generational poverty and a life of systemic trauma from living on the streets. Employment data remains a key performance metric in the stability of Ujamaa men enrolled in the theory of transformation. In Q3 2020, the unemployment rate dropped to 37% with an average hourly wage of $11.90. In Q4, we noticed an increase, a significant increase in unemployment to 76% with an increase in hourly wage of $14.25. This data enabled Ujamaa coaches to mobilize partners that provided over $63,000 in employment development and training stipends in Q4. Just to give you a little bit of information about our enrollment numbers, total year enrollment in 2018 was 1,311, 2019, 1,164. In 2020, 1,206. We track data quarterly and submit these reports to DEED. We have a tracking system that tracks their what they receive in terms of training and education. We had 412 men who received and completed education training in 2020. And in workforce experience with our partners, 234 men were placed in jobs. We have 175 men that received community involvement credit and leadership development. We had 48 men that received post-secondary exploration and career guidance. We had 740 men that were mentored. Mentoring is a critical part of the theory of transformation. I thank you for this time, and I welcome your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Linder. Do we have another testifier?
Yes.
Will a testifier please state your name for the record and proceed?
My name is Bayo Idowu, that's B as in boy, A-Y-O, last name, I, D as in David, O-W-U. Thank you, Chairman Noor and the rest of the committee for letting me speak on my journey with Ujamaa Place. Can I proceed?
Please proceed.
Thank you. So I actually came to Ujamaa Place in January or February, December of 2018 it was. So my struggle at that time was addiction. I had been going through addiction, dropped out of college due to addiction, was having some big time family struggles. It was hard for my family to have me around them. And that was a tough thing for myself, just having my family be such an important part of my life. And I was introduced to Jama Place coming right out of treatment. And it was about the day or so before Christmas. Otis himself actually came to the hotel where I was staying at the time and had a discussion with me, told me that he was going to help me get back to myself, promised my parents the same thing as well. And I think shortly after that, I'd come to Ujamaa, started taking the classes. Within about two weeks, I think, I was living in one of the Ujamaa houses. It was on the light rail track, so I was able to get to and from Ujamaa. I received employment within about, I think it was 3 days of the time that I entered into Ujamaa. I had a job. They also helped me get my car out of impound, among like many other assistance services. But going on with my stay in Ujamaa early on, I had I was still struggling with the addiction pretty heavily. And as many of you may know, it's just something that doesn't just go away because love enters the picture, or help enters the picture. So through that journey, Ujamaa, my coaches, everybody was just able to meet me where I was at, which was very, very helpful for myself. I still had struggles while I was living in Ujamaa's housing at that time. So I actually had a situation with relapse, and I was, I had to go to jail. I had to leave Ujamaa's housing, but that didn't at all trump my relationship with Ujamaa. They helped me get back into treatment. They welcomed me back into the programming. Actually had a successful treatment stint, and I've been clean for about 2+ years now. I was able to get a scholarship to St. Paul College after coming out of that. And I also developed my passion for music, and I'm an aspiring musician. Ujamaa has given me many opportunities to perform for different events. I actually have, I think, already in 2021, done about 2 to 3 performances. And I have more coming this week. So that is something that is just beyond Ujamaa's like direct services, but it's something that they still help me with all of the time. I'm actually in Ujamaa's housing now again for the second time, and I'm a full-time employee intern at Ujamaa, and I have been for just short of a year and a half now. So when it comes to Ujamaa Place, I always tell Otis and everybody else that, once I've passed the age of being able to be a member of Ujamaa, I'll always be a part of Ujamaa, whether that's an employee or a funder or whatever that is. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for your testimony. I believe we have one more testifier.
Yes.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Well, my name is Ramon Johnson. Good afternoon, Chairman Noor and the members of the committee. Once again, my name is Ramon Johnson. I am a Ujamaa man. I came to Ujamaa from Chicago, moved from Chicago to Minneapolis. Otis has been great from day one, bringing me in, bringing me on board, taking me under his wing. I needed help with employment, housing, and counseling. I was lost as a young man. And with the help of Otis and Ujamaa, they brought the man out of me that I was destined to be. I'm now the owner of Get It Done Cleaning. I have a commercial cleaning service. I have 10 employees under me now. I also come back to Ujamaa to help young black men of color to get jobs. So Otis helped me with that. They helped me with resources. So with my journey with Ujamaa, I'm also a board member. So with my journey with Ujamaa and Otis, these guys are great. Like, they take the time out with you. They know when we come in that we broken, and they're going to take some time to get us right. So Otis has been great. He took me on his wing. I also met with the commissioner. I have an invention that I have. It's called Instatabs. I'm looking to get this out and get this product out with Commissioner Harrington and with Otis. We're trying to bring this product in front of the Department of Public and Safety. What I have will help Americans all over the U.S., United States, with car registration tabs, and we're trying to bring this product to life. Once again, I want to thank you guys, and Otis and Ujamaa has been great, and I appreciate the time out for letting me speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Do we have any more testifiers?
No, that's the test pass we have, so we appreciate the opportunity to allow all of them to present to you this afternoon. And we are available for any questions that you and the committee may have.
Any questions for members? Chair Noor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think as you've had the need for us to look into how we can help men with barriers to employment, and how we can make sure that we have an equitable process to ensure especially African-American men have an opportunity, is something that we have to be able to provide that guidance. I ask for your support as we discuss these issues. And Mr. Chair, I think there's a question from one of the members.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd also like to thank the testifiers. And one of the questions that I had for the testifiers on the previous bill was, how do you get your word out? How do people know about your services? How do you connect with the individuals that would benefit from your services?
Yes.
Mr. Sanders?
Yes.
So
Yes.
So
Linda?
My role, I also direct the media. And we have developed a very large base of supporters, new donors on social media. And so we have about 20,000 people that engage with us across all of our social media platforms, as well as our internal communications. Of course, just like the previous organization, word of mouth with the men. The men are our biggest word of mouth. They bring a lot of men into Ujamaa, as well as mothers, aunties, grandmothers. But we do a lot of outreach through events. Brother Bio talked about the events. Even now with COVID, we're doing a lot of digital events where we invite the community. So the community engagement is a very big part of the model, because it also gives the men opportunity to volunteer and to show that they can be leaders in the community.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I'd just like once again thank the testifiers, especially the individuals that share their personal stories. It's very powerful, very impactful. So thank you.
Mr. North.
Thank you so much, Representative Hamilton and Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, having said that, I'd like to renew my motion, House File 612, be laid over for possible inclusion. And I will be asking for your support in the future. So that concludes our testimony on this bill.
Mr. Chair, gavel is back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair Zhe Zhong. And we now have another bill in front of the committee. And I see Representative Vogelman is ready. As I stated during that discussion, Representative Vogelman, Representative Greenman moves House File 426 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I see you do have A1 amendment for the bill. Please welcome to the committee and explain the bill, and if you want us to move the A1 right now.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Representative Greenman, and thank you very much, committee members. I'm here today to present to you House File 426, which will provide $3.74 million for the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program, also known as BDPI. BDPI is one of the most successful economic development programs that we have in Greater Minnesota. It provides grants to cities for the cost of public infrastructure necessary to expand economic growth, retain or create jobs, or increase the tax base. Projects that are eligible to use BDPI-funded public infrastructure include manufacturing, technology, warehousing and distribution, research and development, and agriculture processing and industrial parks. Mr. Chair and members, since 2010, BDPI has funded 140 projects, created more than 5,000 jobs, and retained 9,500 jobs. In the bonding bill passed in the fall, the BDPI program received $8.2 million in funds. Grateful for that. A lot of good things have happened with those funds. Unfortunately, the projected demand for the program far exceeds that amount. So that's why I'm presenting this bill before you today. We're going to continue the base appropriation of $3.74 million for the program. And Mr. Chair and members, doing this is critically important for the program to meet the demand that it will have over the next 2 years, to grow and retain jobs in Greater Minnesota, and to drive the economic development this program has proven it is able to do over the next 2 years. So, Mr. Chair, that's the bill, but I would like to move the A1 amendment, and I'd be more than happy to explain that to you and the members with your permission.
Thank you so much, Representative Vogelman. So having said that, I move A1 amendment. If you wanted to provide us the background on A1 amendment, Representative Vogelman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Yes, this amendment is a BDPI policy proposal that the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and Greater Minnesota Partnership have been working with DEED on during this session. It was intended to be a standalone bill, but Mr. Chair, members, as we all know all too well, there's a backlog in getting bills introduced. So thought it'd be more efficient use of everyone's time. It would make the most sense if we offered it instead as an amendment to House File 426 to be laid over for possible inclusion. This amendment makes two changes to the BDPI program. It sunsets the restrictions on eligible projects on the development site after 10 years. And second, it allows for up to 15% of the project site to be used for development that is ancillary to the eligible projects, but not defined as an eligible project under state statute. And it also makes these changes retroactive for existing BDPI projects. So anyway, Mr. Chair, that's the amendment. That's why we're bringing it forward this way, and I would appreciate your and committee members' support.
Members, any discussion on the A1 amendment? Any discussion? Any discussion? See none. So we will be voting on A1 amendment, and through this virtual process, the Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Noor.
Aye.
Chair Noor, aye. Vice Chair Dejong.
Aye.
Vice Chair Dejong, aye. Lead Hamilton.
Aye.
Lead Hamilton, aye. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Dabney.
Dabney votes aye.
Dabney, aye. Frankie.
Aye.
Frankie, aye. Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman, aye. Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Jergens.
Jergens, aye.
Jergens, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Katisa Watun.
Aye.
Katisa Watun, aye. Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Tujong.
Aye.
Tujong, aye. Chair, we have 14 ayes. 13 ayes.
With 13 ayes, the motion prevails. Representative Vogelman, to the bill as amended, please proceed.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for your support. I've said all I need to say about the bill and about the BDPI. With that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over. I have two testifiers here today, Shane Zart from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and Larry Hosh, who is the Business Development Director for the Greater St. Cloud Development Corporation.
Mr. Zett, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Shane Zart. I'm with the firm Flaherty & Hood and represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The CGMC, as many of you know, is a coalition of more than 100 member cities located all around the state, all outside of the seven-county metropolitan area, and represent their unique interests on a range of issues, including economic development. So thank you first, Mr. Chair, for taking the time to hear this bill and to Representative Wolgamott for serving as chief author this year. As Representative Wolgamott said, you know, the BDPI program is a long-running, popular, extremely successful economic development grant program for Greater Minnesota communities. The BDPI program it helps local governments fund the public infrastructure costs necessary to enable business attraction or expansion within their communities. And so that you can get a glimpse of kind of how this program works and some of the grants that have been issued in the past, the CGMC submitted a handout to the committee that should be included in your materials that contains some program history, some of the history of some of the grants that have been issued in the past. And I think the important thing to note there is that behind each one of those grants is a story about a community developing itself and some pretty remarkable stories of development. I think the next testifier will talk about a few of those as well. But without even knowing it, some of the investments made by the BDPI program might have even come into your life. For example, if you've been to the grocery store and bought Bushel Boy tomatoes, it's possible that those were grown in the city of Owatonna, where a 2016 BDPI grant helped that company expand its production facilities there. And the public infrastructure side of that was upgrading some stormwater facilities to enable that expansion. If your pet has eaten Tuffy's Pet Foods manufactured in Perham, a recent BDPI grant helped upgrade the industrial park in that community to enable that expansion. Many other examples, but a popular one for obvious reasons is if you've enjoyed the offerings of Castle Danger Brewery in Two Harbors, that in part might have been facilitated by a recent BDPI grant that helped with the relocation of a water main in that community that Castle Danger Brewery was one of the beneficiaries of, but that there were other businesses in the community that were able to take advantage of that and expand within the community where they have grown up. So I want to note that the CGMC also supports the language contained in the author's amendment. We're happy to talk in specific about the components of that, but both of the changes reflected in that author's amendment, I think, are some common sense tune-ups to the existing program and some things that arise from the experience on the ground as we have worked with communities who have sought these grants in the past, speaking with DEED over time to monitor some of the trends and the types of grants that are coming forward and how we can make the program a little more responsive. So we do support the changes that author's amendment would make and appreciate consideration for those as well. So with that, I think I'll leave it there. I'm happy to stick around for questions, but I'll turn it over to our next testifier. But first, thank you again, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott, again. And thank you to the many others on this committee. Program in the past has received a pretty remarkable track record of bipartisan support over the years at the legislature as it's been operating as well. So thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Zett. So I'll now welcome Mr. Hosh. Please, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Larry Hosh. I'm Business Development Director with the Greater St. Cloud Development Corporation. Pleasure to be here today. Just to add to Mr. Zart's comments on how the BDPI program may have impacted you on your personal life, there's several other projects that we've worked on that you may know of. So the BDPI funded a project in the city of Cold Spring, allowing for the Cold Spring Brewing Distribution Project to move forward. This leveraged a capital investment of a 40 times rate of return. Cold Spring Brewing also makes White Claw. So if you've ever had a White Claw, that's right in central Minnesota and Cold Spring, benefited from BDPI. Additionally, in the city of Painesville in western Stearns County, this program facilitated the AMPI plant to be able to expand. So if you've had cheese in Minnesota, you probably benefited from this program. But really, just wanting to talk about the benefits of the BDPI program. As you know, greater Minnesota communities already struggle with maintaining their infrastructure, in particular with wastewater treatment and water treatment. When we talk about economic development, not only do municipalities have to maintain their current infrastructure, but oftentimes have to expand on it. And to be able to facilitate economic development, that expansion can't only happen just for a particular project, but it has to be speculative as well. So municipalities oftentimes have to overbuild, not only for the project, but in anticipation of other future economic development projects. And that's really where BDPI helps communities leverage economic development and additional capital expenditures. There's several projects that we've worked on just in central Minnesota that because of BDPI, we were able to facilitate those projects. If not for that, I really don't think they would have been able to continue. We're actively also working on several projects that we anticipate will be coming online in 2021 and 2022, but we also anticipate the assistance of BDPI. So not only the base funding for the program that you're considering right now within the committee, but also the capital for the capital investment for the bonding bill, additional investment is really appreciated, and also want to recognize that it does leverage public-private investments in dollars. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee members. I will leave my comments to that and happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hirsch. I see Representative Hamilton. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I ask my question or make my comment, Representative Wolgamott, you bring out all the heavy hitters when you bring former Representative Hirsch. It's good to see you. We used to serve together, so it's always good to see a fellow colleague, so former colleague. So, Mr. Chairman, on that last amendment that we just passed, typically I like to support the amendments, the author's amendments, as they wish to get the bill in the shape and wish, you know, which they would like to present. So what I would like to do on that amendment is circle back around from someone from the league to just get a little more understanding on that and then the bill itself. So before it's wrapped up in a final omnibus bill. So if you would, please just circle back around with me and visit on that, if you would. But again, I understand the concept of the program, been supportive of all the good projects, good work that it's funded in the past. So I appreciate that. But I would like to further the conversation at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Hamilton. I appreciate your comment on the author's amendment, and I think we will reach back to you because this bill is being laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, any discussion? Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greenman renews her motion for House File 426 as amended to be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So thank you so much, Representative Wolgamott. Did you want to make any final comments before we conclude?
I just want to say thanks to you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to all the committee members for taking the time to hear this bill today. And I just want to ask you to join me in making this investment to grow and retain jobs, to drive economic development all throughout greater Minnesota, and include House File 426 in our future omnibus bill of this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. Thank you to my testifiers.
Thank you so much, Representative Wolgamott. Members, we don't have any other agenda items in front of us. As we look forward, there's a lot of work ahead, and you will be getting the notices from our committee administrator shortly. So I want to appreciate, unless anybody has got any question, having no any other agenda items in front of us, the meeting has been adjourned for today. Thank you so much.